I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore, and really pleased to be joined by good old longtime friend Steve Krause, who is the news director at the Item, itemlive.com, the Daily Item of Lynn. Steve, it's been too long, man. How are you?
I'm doing really well. How about you, Rick?
Same. All things considered, Steve, this has been such a bizarre year, and I don't even remember last time we talked. I know you and Bill have talked. I was just thinking weirdly here that I was so disappointed that we lost 4th of July happenings. Cape Ann lost their Labor Day happenings with the Parade of Sail and stuff. I guess it's only appropriate that now Thanksgiving and Christmas are sort of in jeopardy. But what's your take on how things have gone, particularly from your point of view there in Lynn?
Well, I certainly feel the same way that you do. You know, that it's very, very sad that, I mean, you go back to all the high school kids that lost their graduations. Athletes lost their spring tournaments, and now a lot of them have lost their fall sports and tournaments too. And I've been around the sports beat so long, I know what that means to kids, because their college acceptances and their chances of getting some scholarship money or financial aid, you know, rightly or wrongly, in the eyes of some, I suppose, but they do hinge upon how they play, what they do. And it's just always bad when that normal rhythm of life gets interrupted. But what I think is kind of really unfortunate in this particular instance is that I get the feeling that a lot of this could have been avoided if people had just listened, and if people had just not been escorted down the primrose path, shall we say, by people who just didn't seem to have their interests at heart. I mean, it doesn't seem to be too much of a stretch or too much of a an effort to understand how an airborne disease can be at least slowed down by the wearing of masks and the social distancing and doing all of these protocols, you know, that we've been asked to do since March. But, you know, I found it very disheartening, the extraordinary number of people who just took that as an infringement on their rights or their liberties and things like that. And here we are, November, and we're already on another huge wave of this. We're going to lose Thanksgiving, or the familial aspect of Thanksgiving. At least we're going to lose Christmas, the same thing. And who knows how far into the New Year this went. My 50th class reunion is coming out. Stand a pretty good chance of losing that. I mean, that's not very significant in the grand scheme of things, but here we are. By the time that happens, it'll be over a year since this thing started, and we're still dealing with it. And the only reason why we are is because people just wouldn't listen.
And, that's, you know, the thing is, Steve, it's you know, the COVID fatigue is setting in, so people, perhaps like myself, aren't listening as closely as I ought to be. But you bring up an interesting point that I have to talk with someone, and I haven't yet at this point, about rights. And I'm a military guy. I'm an Army brat. I was in the Army. I served my time. I'm a staunch supporter of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. However, I don't get it. scientists come on, worldwide scientists come on, and they tell you, just wear a freaking mask, you know? You've got a worldwide pandemic where literally hundreds of thousands of people are dying just in the United States, and I don't see that as an infringement on any of my rights. Furthermore, if it were, and if it were for the good of the country, I mean, that's akin, it's not really martial law, but that's what martial law does, and that is designed to protect people. I don't understand that mindset, Steve, and I don't know if you've talked with people who have that, like, no, you can't make me wear a mask. I have to carry a gun. I don't get that. So, and from what I'm reading, that's half the country. So, what's your feeling on that, Steve? Why do people think it's an infringement on their rights to just say, hey, wear a mask in public?
I think a lot of it has to do with who's controlling the narrative in these situations. You know, there's a, you know, I'm likening it to what I heard the other day about more and more people are out buying guns and more people are first-time buyers. What are they buying them for? They're buying them because somebody's planted a bug in their ears that their liberty is going to get compromised, or their this is going to get compromised, or their that is going to get compromised.
Yeah.
And none of that's true, but, you know, it just... People have this ability, they've always had this ability through history to whip other people up into a frenzy and get them to do things that they wouldn't normally do. Now, you know, if your doctor told you that, you know, you are highly susceptible to disease, any kind of a virus, and that your virus, if you get it, your system is so compromised that you could die from this disease, and one of the surest ways that your doctor knew was for you to wear a mask and to just stay away from everybody, isolate, do whatever, really good chance that you would do what the doctor told you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's your welfare and nobody else's. But the minute anybody from the government, or as I like to call it, the government, tells you that, as a way of species survival, let's say, you have to wear masks,
but it's,
social distance and everything. A red light goes off in people that says, government's not telling me what.
But, Steve, it's not even the government so much as it is, quote, the opposition party. I mean, that's the thing I'm sensing is that, okay, if you're in such and such a party and we perceive these doctors like Fauci are in that party, which I don't know whether they are or not, then okay, then you're impinging on my rights. You're, what do they call that? You're a socialist. The other thing is, I remember when Obama was president, there was this thing on social media, about he was going to whip up an army in Texas. They were going to have, army maneuvers, but in fact he was going to mobilize the army to take guns away or something like that.
Yeah.
And that was in 08 or 09. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
And it was like,
yeah.
Are you kidding me? What the hell? I don't get it. So, you know, the social media thing versus, not just social media. I hate that term, social media. But the real fake news. You know, this guy, the guy in the presidency said on 60 Minutes one time, well, anything that makes me look bad, I call fake news. So the real fake news that is all over the internet and Facebook and all this other stuff, that's the stuff people believe.
Yeah. I agree. I think that also if it comes down to a choice between something that I want to do and something that I don't want to do, then you're going to choose what you want to do, and you'll justify it any way that you can. That's great if my mother's telling me I have to eat Brussels sprouts, but,
yeah,
you know, not for something like this. You
yeah.
know, I just... there's an awful lot of reckoning that's going to have to go on over this. An awful lot of reckoning before this, you know, the water is all thrown under the bridge. But this is the biggest thing to me is it's right now become a international tragedy because people won't listen. If only people listened, I think there'd be an awful lot. I'm not going to say it would have been gone. But we wouldn't be going through another spike,
yeah.
You know. And there's an awful lot that went into it, too. I think that as the weather got warmer and, unfortunately, timing being what it is, that's when all the demonstrations began over, you know, George Floyd and people like that because And, of course, you have those demonstrations. Nobody's keeping their 6 feet away from each other. It's a mob. Whether it's a mob you agree with or a mob you don't agree with, it's still a mob. And I'm sure an awful lot of it was transmitted that way. And an awful lot of it was transmitted by college kids that decided it was more fun to go to the beach than it was worry about other people who might be sick. There were a thousand reasons, suppose.
You're making your friend Tim Kern smile, because Tim is on the exact same wavelength as you, and he's very, very upset that people...
Oh, the Sacred Heart Boy, there you go.
He's very upset that people aren't listening. But, you know, I think going back to the sports model, Steve, I don't want to call it a demonstration, the rally that the kids, the Northeastern Conference kids had in December, in Danvers in July, I think it was, on the Common, sort of got people to say, okay, we want to play sports, we can play sports, and we can do it safely. And I attended that rally. Every single kid had a mask on. Every single kid was polite. And there were dozens, if not hundreds. And nevertheless, the Northeastern Conference, the Cape Ann League, some of the schools got to play, but the Lynn kids didn't, except for St. Mary's, of course, and Fenwick over in Peabody. But the Lynn kids didn't, and, you know, they didn't get that season. I know you, like me and Bill and so many of the other guys we've known over the years, Thanksgiving Day, I'm going to be lost Thanksgiving morning. I don't know what I'm going to do in the house here. I have no idea what to do. Because we won't have Thanksgiving football, and you won't have the bean pot, and, you know, all of that.
I know, that hurts.
Yeah. Well, that's what I want you to reflect on.
Four in a row here. That would have been great.
Well, everything is on pause right now, but what's the status in Lynn overall, Steve? How are you looking at this? Because, nobody wants us to go on and continue, and you know, right now there's a second surge, and Lynn just continues in that red zone.
Yeah, well, I think if there is such a thing as a perfect storm for the spread of this virus, I would think that Lynn would be the perfect storm. So much of the city is multifamily housing units. And there are an awful lot of housing units in those multifamily units where there are an awful lot of people in there. So right off the bat, the opportunity to social distance, I mean, I know in my house right now, it's just my wife and me. I can be on one side of the house and she can be on the other side of the house. And the house is big enough that the virus is going to die halfway between the two of us.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get some houses where there are an awful lot of people, not as big a unit, not a lot of room. People are living shoulder to shoulder. You wonder how many of them are wearing masks while they're living shoulder to shoulder. And it just seems to be a perfect storm for the spread of these diseases.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have your usual cholera people who just, they don't care. It doesn't involve them. They're young. They get the virus. They'll cough and wheeze for a few days. And then it'll be life as normal. I get it, and I'm in a lot of trouble. You know, so I'm conscious of these things where other people might not be. Other people don't see it as a threat. And no matter how much you try to tell them, they can't get it into their heads that the darn thing is not just a threat to them. They can turn around and become a real threat to somebody like me, you know, who's older and a little bit more physically compromised. And that's where the trouble lies. Again, it goes back to the same thing that we've been talking about now for the last 5 minutes or so. People don't care. They don't listen. They don't think. And, you know, this is how these things spread. And I'll never forget, I was listening to a George Carlin routine. And he was talking about how wars are not going to be the end of us. You know, we're not going to get annihilated by any bombs, by any wars. What we're going to do is we're going to all get wiped out by a virus.
Oh, jeez.
And I never, ever forgot. Yeah. And he was, of course, being his usual self, but I never forgot that. And that's all I can think about now is that, you know,
wow, yeah.
I mean, I'll give George Carlin that he was smart and perceptive and everything like that, but, you know, for somebody like him to have been able to figure that out and not anybody else, to me, it's just, it's crazy.
I hadn't heard that, but yeah, it's almost weird, you know, and prophetic. Steve, a couple of other topics maybe we could turn our attention here to. I mentioned the Constitution. You talked about rights. How do you look, and you're the senior political eyeball here in the sky and in on the North Shore. How do you perceive this recent national election?
Well, I mean, other than the fact that the guy who's been declared the winner is the guy that I wanted, is I'm fine. You know, I have no use or no love or no anything for what's going on now with the other guy trying to wrest it back, but I think that he will ultimately be defeated, but the only question is at what cost, you know, and what's the long-term cost of this, you know, will this ever be fixed, and I don't know, but as far as the election itself goes, I was very happy, you know.
Mm-hmm. The seeds of what's going on now, in my opinion, and I am not a political observer, and I'm I like to be apolitical, but I'm certainly beginning to change that under the past 4 years. Seems to me we're planted in the 90s when Newt Gingrich said publicly and then accomplished it, we're going to block everything that Obama does. It's going to be negative. Republicans versus Democrats. That's been carried on. The Democrats have done it. The Republicans have done it. And it continues.
I actually bring it back to Reagan. I every more than the old we have, I blame on Reagan. So that's just me. But I think that certainly that Gingrich contract with America was the start of it all.
Yeah, against Clinton. I said Obama, but it was against Clinton. Yeah.
That was probably the start of the modern version of it. You know, I don't know. I tend not to blame the Democrats as much. I mean, I blame them, but I tend to blame them not as much as I blame the Republicans, because they're the ones that perfected the art of obstruction. And, I mean, it's one thing to have a healthy debate, air your grievances, and then vote, but it's another thing to just fold your arms and just, you know, not vote. Just say, we're not going to play. We're not playing. We're going to stay in the locker room.
Yep.
And you can't do it without us, so we ain't coming out. To me, that's what this is like. And I don't know how do you combat that? I mean,
one thing I can say, Steve, is that one-on-one is how you combat it. You talk to each other, and when you find someone who is diametrically opposed, at least in my opinion, diametrically opposed to what I believe in, and we talk. You know what? We may not find a middle ground. But we can find a way to talk to each other and not say, I'm going to go buy a gun. And, you know, in my opinion, as a teacher, that's got to happen one-on-one, and it's got to happen 300 million times in this country.
That's an awful lot of time passing, though, and you don't have that much time to solve some of these issues.
Well, I didn't say it was practical.
I think, well, I mean, if you really want to know it, I'll tell you what I think. I think that the candidate, we scrutinize candidates way too much now, and as a result of that, nobody who would actually be smart enough to be able to run and solve some of these problems, nobody will do it. Nobody wants their personal lives and their privacies and all of this stuff. Nobody wants that much of their lives exposed to the public. And there really isn't any reason for it either. But that's what happens. Somebody decides they're going to run for office, and the next thing you know, you have people uncovering lids of garbage cans outside trying to find something on these people. And it's not for anything constructive. It's for the exact purposes of getting something on somebody. And then what winds up happening is nobody that's any good will want to run. Now, I don't know how much time we have left, but let's just pose a question here. Of those I called them the two soccer teams because there were at least 22 people running. Of those 22 Democrats that were running for president last year, whenever it was, how many of them do you really think were worth a damn?
Okay, let me answer that as a quiz answer, a quiz question. I think I respected maybe possibly four total, maybe.
I mean, I don't know if it was four or five or whatever it was. It wasn't 22.
No.
And even of the four or five that you respected, when you got into looking at them, all of them were seriously flawed in one respect or another. There was nobody that emerged as being somebody that anybody could rally behind. You know, some people could rally behind one, some people could rally behind another, but there was no universal person that you could coalesce behind. Now, I don't like Trump, but the one thing that I will give Trump is that at least he was somebody who could sweep people along. And I'm not saying that everybody that can do that is a good person, but he at least had the ability to do it.
Well, I was going to say, he is a master of media. He is, you know, they talk about, what's his name, Stern? Donald Trump is the master of media. He is the most amazing controlling media icon I've ever seen.
Democrats haven't had anybody like that since JFK. And how long ago was that now? 60 years ago?
Yep.
So Democrats haven't had anybody who could do that since JFK.
Yep.
Probably the closest out of all of them was Clinton. And I would say no. I don't think, for all that Obama had going for him, I don't think that was, obviously that wasn't one of them, or he wouldn't have had the troubles that he had. I think that Trump had it. I think Reagan had it. And, you know, grant you that very few people have had that ability.
Right.
It's a tough ability to have, but...
All right, Steve, let's go. We got a few more minutes here, and I want to.
All right.
There's something else I know that I want you to talk about, and that is we've lost three icons in the last couple of weeks. We lost a national icon in Alex Trebek. We lost a regional icon and legend in Tommy Heinsohn, and we lost a local legend in Larry McIntyre. And maybe just a comment on any or all of the three.
Well, I'll start with the local guy. I liked Larry a lot. Larry he was a character. You know, he had a referee's personality, if you know what I mean.
Yes, that's well put, yeah.
He could be a tad pugnacious at times. You know, he was probably used to getting grief from coaches, and so he kind of knew how to take it, and he knew how to deal with it. And, but I'll tell you, he was always a guy. He was always, whenever I was uncovering something, he was always a friendly face. You know, sometimes when you walk into a gym on the other side of the world, you know, during a tournament game or something, and you don't know a soul, and you don't know what the lie of the land is, and you don't know what kind of interference you're going to get from overly officious people who don't know the rules as to who to let in and who not to let in, you know, and you feel like you're isolated among 1,000 people, let's say. You see a guy like Larry McIntyre come walking at you, and you say to yourself, oh, good, Larry, friendly face.
Yeah.
You know, he'll have my back and whatever I need.
Well put.
And he always did.
Yep.
You know, he always did. And, I hadn't seen him for a few years. I didn't realize he was sick, but good man, big loss.
Absolutely,
tough loss.
Well put, and condolences to his family. Last time I saw Larry was at Moynihan Lumber Sports Banquet recently, a couple of years ago, and you know, he looked the same. But you're right, that familiar face, man, it enables you to navigate through almost everything, doesn't it?
Yep, it does.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, he's 85. He lived a good long life, you know, but you do kind of wish he'd lived a little longer.
Yeah. Yeah, but, and it's never enough, man. It's never enough.
Never enough.
Like that Neil Diamond song, whatever it was. being done too soon. Okay, and also I know that you had some conversations, did you not, with Tommy Heinsohn?
Way back in the beginning of my career, I went to some Celtics games and practices and stuff like that, and I'd seen him over the years at games. My encounters with him were more early on, you know, when he was still coaching the Celtics. And he was a scary dude.
Yeah.
He was and he wasn't. I mean, I know what he was a lot more of a dignified thinking person than you might have thought about when you saw him on the court screaming at Mendy Rudolph or something like that. But I think that of any Celtic, because of all of the different eras he spanned, as him as much as anybody was the Boston Celtics. He wore the face of the Boston Celtics. You know, Russell didn't stick around and work for the team on the team's behalf. You know, Havlicek disappeared and went off and did what he did, and Bird went back home to Indiana and coached another team. This guy stayed local. He was a player. He was a coach. He was a broadcaster. He bled the green. He drank the green Kool-Aid. You know, he ate the green Jell-O. I mean, you know, he was the Celtics
to
me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that a big part of that legacy died with him.
Amen. Amen to that. Good stuff, Steve. I appreciate it. We're going to do this again, and it ain't going to take so long next time. We're going to do this on a semi-regular basis because it's fun. And I love reading your stuff, Steve. We should point out it's all there at itemlive.com. It's an item newspaper as well. And Steve, stay well. And it's not trite to say Happy Thanksgiving. It's be safe and enjoy the holiday.
Well, I will, and I'm still going to eat.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to go hungry. That's for sure.
I hear you. So, hey, Steve, thank you so much. Talk to you later.
You too, Rick. Bye.
Take care. That is Steve Krause, who is the news director at the Item of Lynn. That is a daily newspaper in Lynn, and you can also find them at itemlive.com. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire. By the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.